Mouton's Damon Clues, Reel 1. So, could I ask you then, Hortense, first of all, about your background? Can you remember what life was like for your family before the war? This would be before 1939.
Yes, I can. It was very, very busy. My mother had a general store. My father was a master shoemaker in Brussels, and of course he used to go up and down with the train to work. We were with four children. The eldest one was a boy, my brother, and who was 14 years my senior. And then my sister, who was 13 years older. And then in 1926 I was born. And then 4 years after me, there was another girl. So very happy family. A lot of the family were very, very close. Once the shop was closed, it was very private. I was never allowed to bring children to play, you know, and all that. We did play in the park, which was next door, adjacent to the house. We also had the situation of the house, was which my youngest sister, even now to this day, lives in the house of my parents. And the surroundings haven't talked to it. north of it, we had Philips factory, radio, and so forth. And then on the east part, we got the main cemetery of Louvain. And the west, we got the main prison of Belgium. It's a combination of surrounding very useful to come in later years. And we were a family that were extremely well known. Everybody seems to know us, in particular me. I was I used to go with mum now and then. We used to be looked after during the day. It was very rare that we saw mum only passing through in the shop. But when there was deliveries done and all that, they used to take me. In school, I was always very interested in our past history. I wasn't a very good attentive, which much to my regret, actually, that I didn't study more.
Interesting, you talking about history and your interest. How important was World War One to Belgians when you were growing up? You know, was the memory still very vivid?
To me, it was. this may sound ridiculous, but I used to love to hear my grandpapa tell me little stories. I used to beg him to tell me a little story about the First World War. And Louvain was burnt to the ground in the First World War. And even as such a tender age at school, I was always listening. And I was, of course, the children that were in my class. Their parents had been through the war. It wasn't all that long ago. And I can also remember that for some, unfortunately, I know with the war it brings a lot of disruption in families, but of course the First World War to us was something that was new. You know, never mind the old history that you learned in school, that wasn't all that important. was the fact that some of my little friends at school lost their father. And that was sort of the beginning of the first time you discovered there was a loss, where, you know, what had happened. It hasn't altered now, but it came very often. And then when these people were, these brave men, very young, because he was gassed, you see. And I also remember going to some little friends' houses. And the father, it was always a father, so because the grandfathers, in cases of course they were grandfathers, but it was a father's, because my father was started his married life in 1912. So my brother was born in 13, and my sister was born in 14. She was born during the First World War. So that was their young life that they was just starting, so that automatically went up. And then they used to stand there, and I used to go home and say to them, so-and-so's father, he must be very ill. He's standing on the door and he's gasping for breath. And then Mum, if she knew them, she would say, well, that's from the First World War, from the gassing, you see. So, you know, it was something that I wanted to know all the time. I wanted to know why, and I felt so sorry, and, you know.
Did this, do you think, looking back, do you think it coloured your attitudes towards, say, the Germans, even the French and the British, because of that war? Did you have any particular feeling about
that?
Well,
yes. Well, there again, I mean, the French, I never forgot because of Waterloo. the British were always my country I looked up to, because they were always there. They always came and freed us. Even in the, I do know that as much, that even in the Dark Ages, they were always back, long before it was known as Belgium. But my ancestors, they always just come and free. So it's a sort of a selfish point, I suppose. But the Dutch, we didn't have much to do with, although we're supposed to be half Dutch, half German, I don't know. No, the Germans, I didn't like them, because I thought as a small child they were very cowards. Because they had burnt my beautiful city down. And I remember my mother telling me once these little stories. I used to always, when we were sitting quietly, where everybody wanted to, my younger sister wanted a fairy story, and I used to think, I don't want these fairy stories, I want something real. And Mum told me, she was, when my sister was born on the 14th of September 1914, so that must have been we lived in the town then, on the top of the highest point of the town. Mum said that they had arrived on the horses, that's how they, you know, it was some kind of guard, whatever you call them, with the spike helmets, the spikes on the helmet. And they arrived in, and they raped him, they burned everything in sight. And the men must have disappeared, gone, I don't know, cellars or wherever. And we've been right in the middle of the town. My great-grandfather, who I never knew, was an old man then. And he was living with my parents. And they entered the house, and my mother was very pregnant of my sister. And Grandpa Peter must have, because he must have experienced another war, you see, in 18-something. And the little old man must have been so terrified that he had tried to go under the bed. And they dragged my mother upstairs and went through all the rooms looking for the man. And when they arrived in the bedroom, my grandpa's shoes, legs were sticking out in his bottom. And he couldn't go any further, apparently, and he was stuck. And that made a very big impression when Mum told me that. And they kicked him very, very hard. And I've never forgotten that. It was how horrible. In any case, it's about that he didn't live long after the war. With an incident like that, you see, I thought how horrible. How can they kick an old gentleman, you see?
So, do you remember the day war broke out, you know, when Germany went into Poland, and the sort of events leading up to that? You know, I wonder what the atmosphere would have been like. You obviously were still a young girl then, weren't you? If you were, how old would you have been? 13?
Yes, I'm 40 on the 12th of August to come. I would have been 14, yes. So I... 40 was my year of 14, you know. But of course, when the war broke out, when we were, I wasn't quite 14 yet, I was 13 and a half, well, just over 13 and a half.
Do you remember that, you know, the actual start of the war?
I do, very much, very clearly. My eldest brother, who by then I... just before the war, he was a regular soldier, and he was also a great sportsman for the army, and he used to win different events, and I used to go to the tournaments, and he used to take me everywhere, and the horse, the dressage and all that.
What was his name?
François Damon. And with him being such a great sportsman, he was very well known amongst all the officers, and, you know, I do remember he was always the one that won the cups, and I was very proud of that. And then, of course, Poland was, I don't remember much, but I do remember that everybody was on very nervous around Thunderbox, because the Germans had overrun Poland and all that, and because people were listening to the wireless and so forth. And, I suppose unless you have experienced war, you don't actually can visualize what it was. And of course, in my mind, my brave soldiers from the First World War and the British, you know, we made it. And we won, and that was it. Thinking, oh well, that this time, you know, it won't take that long. Philips, the Belgian government took Philips over, and all the people in 39. Not quite sure about it, it was 38 or 39, I think, that were roll call, what you called it, when they were called up for...
Oh, conscription, was it?
Yes. Mm. And the Walloons, they were nearly all Walloons, you know, as in Belgium there is the Flemish and the Walloons, well, Louvain is actually Flemish. But the Walloons, for some reason or other, were all brought by Philips, in Philips. And my brother-in-law, and my brother already was in the army, But they were all called up, you see, between such an age and such an age. And of course, with having a shop, I mean, the soldiers used to come in, and I used to think, oh, they look horrible. They're not my soldiers, my brave soldiers. They didn't have any uniforms, proper uniform. They just laid about in the open park and all on the grass. It was a beautiful summer. My mum used to deliver all the vegetables and the fruit to the kitchen. You know, they used to come and collect it. And that, I think it was Thursday or a Friday, but I think it was a Thursday when Belgium was attacked. I do remember that. And the reason I remember it, whatever day it was the day after the delivering. From all the, and for a couple of hours you could not move in our house because the crates that were delivered for the army kitchen, and until they came and take those crates away, and there was no room. And I used to hate that. In any case, they came and cancelled everything half an hour beforehand. So my mum had to ask some of the soldiers to take the crates out and put them in the garden because we didn't know what to do. And then the next thing, of course, we were just, and all those soldiers, they all knew us, you know. And all of a sudden, the word went round, they've attacked, they went to Belgium. And I think it was the same day or that, I'm not sure of now, but the first place that was bombed was Louvain again. And I do remember this fight going on and hearing all the noise, and I saw this plane coming down, making this horrible screaming noise, and I thought it was shot down, it was the enemy, you see, it was shot down, and I remember I was, and some of the boys that were laying, they were laughing, and they were shouting, hooray, and of course it was just too close, and then there was one particular man, and I can still see him so vividly, he was very tall, big lad, and he picked me up underneath one arm and picked my little sister up underneath the other and ran, you see, because he must have realised that there was, you know, as soon as they were down the roof and they went up, and of course he dropped and the house was pretty, about half of the street was down in that one instance. Absolute chaos, you see. Again, unless you experience, which you're shocked to reality, I suppose, as everybody that goes through. And apparently, as we all know now, nothing was organised, from what I can hear, it wasn't as well organised as in this country. Because all through, we never had a gas mask. Nobody had a gas mask. And from what I hear here, I mean, everybody was supplied with, however efficient it was, but we were supposed to be allocated to a certain spot. There's a lot of monasteries. It's an university city, Louvain. And one our shelter, our air raid shelter, shall we call it, was supposed to be at the end of the street and the main street, which was a cloister. And I don't know if that counted, but if you had these alcove cellars, they were supposed to be more protective. I don't know if that was true. So every monastery and every cloister and every old-fashioned school, shall I say, The different streets were out there to run there if ever there was an area to go there. With that bombing, the one where we should have gone was already flat. Excuse me. And nearly all the nuns lost their lives because they went they were novices actually in that cloister, nuns to be. And all these young girls lost their lives. They were all buried in the cellar. That was an impact that I remember later, you see. Because there was one, the pharmacist the family used to go to, he had two daughters that were novices in there. And they weren't much older, well, they was perhaps nearly 18, but you know, that was, to me, that was still, they were friends. I could talk better to, at my age, to a girl of 17 or 18 than to one of my own age, you see. I could never associate somehow. So I used to brood over that. And then father wasn't back from Brussels. And mother took us to the Dominicans. And it was full. And from the Dominicans, we came sort of back again, and went by the Benedictines. And in the cloister of the Benedictines, we stayed, and during the night, it was bombed, and all the following day, it was bombed, and eventually, when we saw daylight again, it looked of nearly every street was targeted, and because you saw the very injured people, you know, it's terrible. By then, Father had come back and had found us, and of course, in great panic, you see, they decided to, the war won't last long, you know, they defeat them and all that, and we walk. Then when we walked about 30 kilometres before somebody realised that, I forgot who it was, most likely father or mother, because grandfather and grandmother and two aunties and my sister that was married, we were all together then, and we were supposed to walk as far as we could before the Germans were turned back.
Would that be towards France?
To France, yes.
Did you have much faith in the Maginot Line? Did it sort of feature in your thinking, the Maginot Line?
Oh, yes, we thought it would never come open yet. But I thought, what a joke. I did see it. I walked on top of it. And I couldn't understand why on earth we could possibly stop the Germans. We walked, we got lost amongst it. And we never saw a soul. So, don't ask what it was all. It was all a big joke. Didn't turn out to be a joke, really. If only people would learn a lesson by their first mistakes. And try not to repeat them again. Somebody realised that we haven't got anything with us. Nothing. We just started walking and that was it. So grandfather went back and father. And we were sitting in a field somewhere where we were supposed to stay there till they came back. And I don't know the instructions that they'd been given, but they were supposed to fetch some bit of food and so forth and a blanket and some clothes, which they did. And they came back and they were loaded up with each was two of those very thick jacquard blankets over their shoulders, recently hanging them. Hardly any food. They'd left the valuables behind. I remember, which was very rare, I remember the first time I had an argument between my father and mother. And she went mad because he'd forgotten the money. And I can remember that was the argument about, for heaven's sake, Jack, you're supposed to have gone back for the savings, you see. He'd have forgotten. I think somebody else went back for it, but they didn't find it all. So that was something to remember, that was the first time. By the time they went back, everything already was plundered. They plundered the house. The shop was one, it wasn't a very big shop, but it was absolutely packed. And it was empty. Everything was empty.
So who would have taken that? Who would
the civilians, the Belgians, the probably people that we've known all our lives, you see. Of course, I mean, the doors were broken open, and I mean, you didn't have time, I suppose, from 3 years, really. Because in every, I mean, the fighting was all day long. And then the panic that was on the road was horrific. The soldiers, the British soldiers, were mixed up. Yeah. Then all of a sudden you would hear people shout. Oh, the panic and the fighting and the screaming that was going on. It was, you couldn't believe your eyes. Never mind all the fear that you had yourself. I mean, you heard an airplane and you realise how stupid you can be, really. And all of a sudden, everybody would jump in a ditch or, you know, on the airplane edge. That was the first thing. They used the machine gun. You see, you don't realise that till afterwards. You would have been better running in an open field and going down there instead of on the site, on the ditching, on the road. And then my eldest sister had one of those big red blankets over her shoulder and her back. And then she used to jump in, and then we had to lay on top of it so that they wouldn't see her covering the red that you see. All these things afterwards you think, yeah, that was absolutely stupid.
Did you see anyone sort of shot up or killed?
And then all of a sudden there would be a panic. And this is a spy, and this is a spy, and they used to beat them. Everybody seemed to be arrested for spying. Blood was running. And I used to say, how do you know that's a spy? You see, a spy was something, you know, out from another planet. When it was an airman, I can still see the face actually of this boy, and he had a terrible beating because he accused him of being a spy, and he was, I don't know what, I think he was a British soldier, but somebody must have shouted he's a spy. And he got a terrible beating. I don't know what they did with him. They took him away. Police took him away. But I don't think for a thing in those days they weren't going to put the German soldiers in with British uniform on already. I don't think so. Oh. In any case, all this misery went on. Then we eventually we were on this ground where there was all this concrete stubble sticking out and princes, and that was the first thing. In France, we got lost on that. The cows in the field. Oh, those poor cows that hadn't been milked, and they were literally screaming with, you know, when I say that, they must have been in agony. And now and then you would see my grandma went also and milked some cows just to relieve them. And of course, you couldn't stop all that long all the time, you see, after carrying them.